In his State of the Union address last night, President Bush singled out three countries, Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, saying all three pose a threat to the U.S. because of their efforts to acquire weapons of mass destruction. Speaking before a joint session of Congress, the president highlighted the progress made so far in the war on terrorism, citing the liberation of Afghanistan. But he also said that the battle is far from over, preparing Americans for an effort that will take many years. The president also detailed improvements in homeland security and called on Congress to work with him to rejuvenate the nation's economy. NPR's Don Gagne reports from the White House.
At 15 minutes past 9 Eastern Time last night, President Bush stood in the historic chamber of the United States House of Representatives and began his first formal State of the Union address by acknowledging both the challenge and the triumph of this moment in American history.
As we gather tonight, our nation is at war, our economy is in recession, and the civilized world faces unprecedented dangers. Yet the state of our union has never been stronger.
The first half of the 48-minute speech focused on the war effort. The president spoke of the progress made since he last stood in the same spot and addressed the Congress. That was back on September 20th, 9 days after the terrorist attacks that changed the nation. Since then, thousands of terrorists have been captured or killed, their training camps in Afghanistan destroyed, and an entire people have been freed from oppression. Living evidence of this is the new interim leader of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, who watched the address from a seat in the balcony next to First Lady Laura Bush. But the president also offered a bit of caution by describing some of the items seized by U.S. forces in Afghanistan, diagrams of American nuclear power plants, instructions for making chemical weapons, and surveillance maps of American cities.
What we have found in Afghanistan confirms that far from ending there, our war against terror is only beginning. Most of the 19 men who hijacked planes on September the 11th were trained in Afghanistan's camps, and so were tens of thousands of others. Thousands of dangerous killers, schooled in the methods of murder, often supported by outlaw regimes, are now spread throughout the world like ticking time bombs set to go off without warning.
Then came the charges against North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, countries which the president says pose a major threat by virtue of their sponsorship of terrorist activity and their desire to amass powerful weapons.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world by seeking weapons of mass destruction. These regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred. They could attack our allies or attempt to blackmail the United States. In any of these cases, the price of indifference would be catastrophic.
The president offered no specifics on his plans to deal with these nations, and a senior administration official cautioned against interpreting the president's remarks to mean that Iran, Iraq, or North Korea are next in line for a military attack. The official added that many options are being considered. The president's message last night, though, if short on details, made it clear the U.S. will be persistent in tracking down and eliminating terrorist threats. It doesn't end, he said, with the victory in Afghanistan.
We can't stop short. If we stop now, leaving terror camps intact and terror states unchecked, our sense of security would be false and temporary. History has called America and our allies to action, and it is both our responsibility and our privilege to fight freedom's fight.
The president said that his proposed Pentagon budget includes the largest increase in defense spending since the early years of former President Ronald Reagan. It's needed, he said, to buy sophisticated weapons and to increase pay for military personnel. He also said that spending increases for defense and for homeland security will mean the federal budget will once again run a deficit after years of surpluses. Switching to domestic issues just past the halfway mark of the speech, the president covered familiar territory, calling on Congress to make the tax cuts passed last year permanent and to support even more cuts this year. Those cuts would begin with the passage of the economic stimulus package that got hung up in the Senate at the end of last year.
The way out of this recession, the way to create jobs, is to grow the economy by encouraging investment in factories and equipment, and by speeding up tax relief so people have more money to spend. For the sake of American workers, let's pass a stimulus package.
The president also asked Congress to pass his energy plan and to give him enhanced powers to negotiate trade deals, saying each will mean more jobs. And he said fighting the recession should call forth the same kind of bipartisan effort that Congress has mustered in supporting the war on terrorism. Also on the domestic front last night, the president called for reforms to protect workers' pensions and 401k plans, a proposal motivated by the collapse of the giant Texas energy company Enron, a corporation that led all others in supporting the president's own political campaigns. The president did not mention Enron by name last night. Near the end of the address, the president made a call for increased volunteerism. He challenged every American to commit to 2 years, or a total of 4,000 hours over their lifetime, to the service of their community and their nation. He said he would establish something called the USA Freedom Corps to coordinate the effort, building on the AmeriCorps and the Senior Corps programs already in place. The Democratic response last night came from Missouri Congressman Dick Gephardt, who also spoke of bipartisanship.
On the day after the attacks, I went to the Oval Office for a meeting with the president. I said, "Mr. President, we have to find a way to work together. I said, we have to trust you, and you have to trust us." Since that day, there's been no daylight between us in this war on terrorism. We've met almost every single week and built a bipartisan consensus that is helping America win this war.
But Gephardt also underscored the differences between Democrats and the White House on domestic policy, portraying the president as too close to big business and out of touch with average Americans.
Our values call for tax cuts that promote growth and prosperity for all Americans. Our values call for helping patients and older Americans, not just big HMOs and pharmaceutical companies, ensuring that seniors don't have to choose between food and medicine. Our values call for helping workers who've lost their 401k plans and protecting pensions from corporate mismanagement and abuse. Our values call for helping the unemployed, not just large corporations and the most fortunate.
And that is the message that the Democrats will try to get out this year. They say they're ready to work with the White House, but not to surrender their own domestic agenda to the president's, no matter how high his approval ratings. Democrats still feel the public is more likely to support their approach on the economy, on health care, and on protecting the environment. Despite the wartime spirit of unity in the chamber last night, no one was forgetting that this is an election year, a time when policy differences are highlighted. The president gets sky-high marks from the public on his job performance, but Democrats know the same was true for the first President Bush in the months following his success in the 1991 Gulf War. And whatever happens in the war on terrorism, Democrats feel sure there will be plenty of other things for them to talk to voters about. Don Gagne, NPR News, The White House.